Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Nimitz student arrested. Ector County ISD police on Wednesday arrested a seventh grade girl at Nimitz Middle School for telling another student she was going to shoot them, a news release said. A teacher heard the comment and reported it. The girl is now charged with a Class A misdemeanor threat of exhibition of a weapon on school grounds or bus, the release said. Names in the news, military honors. Navy Fireman 3rd Class Clarence A. Blaylock, a native of Fort Worth, who died aboard the USS Oklahoma during the December 7, 1941 attack. His remains were buried Wednesday at the National Memorial Cemetery of the Pacific in Honolulu, Hawaii, with full military honors. Blaylock has been honored with the Purple Heart, American Defense Service Medal, and World War II Victor Medal. Navy firemen were part of the Engine Room Force, Artificer Branch. Historically non-rated, engine room sailors were paid at a higher rate than their deck counterparts because of the more strenuous nature of the work. Firemen were responsible for standing engineering watches and performing minor maintenance repairs. This rating is part of an apprenticeship opportunity that leads to training in propulsion and precision welding, fabrication, plumbing. New rector, Midland, St. Nicholas Episcopal Church, welcomed the Reverend Amy Haney as the new church's rector at the All Saints Day service November 6th. Haney comes to St. Nicholas from Trinity Episcopal Church in Fort Worth, where she has served as associate rector since 2016. Prior to that, Haney served at the Episcopal Church of Wichita Falls and St. Martin in the Fields in Keller. Haney is excited to return to West Texas. She previously lived in Odessa from 1977 to 1984. She is married to David Haney, a retired cardiologist. Together, they have two grown children, Ben and Sam, and dog Sarah and Gata. David and I are excited to start the next chapter of our lives in Midland with God's people at St. Nicholas Episcopal Church, Haney said. As the new priest in town, I am looking forward to getting to know my new community through so many people, parishioners, colleagues, and community leaders. I am curious about what God is up to in Midland right now and how to partner in whatever that work may be. Graduate Kerrville Alanisha Brown of Odessa received her Master of Business Administration from Shriner University during the summer semester. City Employee Spotlight Battalion Chief Bradley Reese was promoted to the position of Assistant Chief of Administration effective October 30th. Reese was hired on September 13, 2004, and was promoted to Captain in March 16, 2013. He was later promoted to Division Captain in September 1, 2019. After serving a couple of years in that position, Reese was then promoted to Battalion Chief on July 25, 2021. City of Odessa Human Resources Assistant Nayeli Munoz joined the City of Odessa several months ago and has more than 3 years of local government experience. Part of her responsibilities include assisting in employee recognition programs, maintaining the job posting website, and conducting new employee orientations for all new employees. Munoz says the best part of her job is seeing people go through the hiring process as applicants, interviewees, and finally official City of Odessa employees. I love being able to guide applicants and new hires as they begin their journey with the City of Odessa. In her free time, she likes to cook, run, and play piano. She is also fluent in Spanish.
Obituaries. Michael Sherman Bowman, age 70, of Odessa, died Friday, November the 4th. Jesus Ulysses Ontiveros, 23, of Odessa, died Saturday, November the 5th. Catherine Ingrid Thomas, maiden name Keelhorn, died November the 4th. Thomas was 61 years of age. Fred Alfred Urban Jr. died Friday, November the 4th in Odessa.
Death notices for November 10th. Patricia Dean, 67, of Midland, died Tuesday, November 8th. In Midland, no services have been scheduled. Arrangements are by Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Catherine Ingrid Kilhorn Thomas, 61, of Odessa, died Friday, November 4th in Odessa. Services will be scheduled at a later date. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa.
Midland Reporter Telegram obituaries published Thursday, November 10th, 2022. Emma Derrick Cheesy Cooks passed away unexpectedly on October 22nd, 2022, at the age of 15 in Dallas, Texas. Emma Derrick was born on July 4th, 2007, to Emma Spears and Frederick Cooks in Midland, Texas. As a baby, Cheesy was curious, joyful, and very busy. Our family was not expecting the loss of Emma Derrick or for his life to be cut so short so soon. We are all devastated by this loss and will feel the absence of him forever. Cheesiest was the sweetest, kindest, bubbliest, and most loving soul and a joy to be around. Emma Derrick will be forever missed. Funeral services will be held Saturday, November 5th, 2022, at 1 p.m. at Mount Calvary Missionary Baptist, 303 East Shandon Avenue, Midland, Texas, 79705. Flowers can be sent to the American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home. Death notices. Ernest Brown. Ernest Brown, 74, passed away November 3rd, 2022. Receiving of family and friends will be held on Friday, November 11th, from 6 to 8 p.m. at Avalo Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home. Funeral service will take place Saturday, November 12th, 2022, at 1 p.m. at Goodwill Baptist Church, with Pastor Kenneth Johnson officiating. Funeral services are entrusted to Avalo Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home. Online condolences can be received at asanchezfh.com. Harold Eugene Hicks. Harold Eugene Hicks, 85, of Midland, passed away November 8, 2022. The family will receive guests from 5 to 7 p.m. Friday, November 11th, 2022, at Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home. Celebration of a Joyous Life will be held at 10:30 a.m. Saturday, November 12th, 2022, at First Baptist Church Chapel in Midland. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at npwelch.com. Herbert E. Miller, Jr. Herbert E. Miller, Jr., 89, of Midland, passed away November 7th, 2022. Celebration of life services will be held at 2 p.m. Sunday, November 13th, 2022, at First Baptist Church Chapel in Midland. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at npwelch.com. Patricia Dean. Patricia Dean, 67, of Midland, passed away November 8, 2022. There is no service planned. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at npwelch.com.
This is Reed, and this is the Midland Reporter Telegram Health and Wellness for Wednesday, November 9, 2022. Baylor College of Medicine names Hoard to board. Dan Hoard III of Midland was named this week to the Board of Advisors for the Baylor College of Medicine. The college sent out a news release that stated the partner in Headlock Investment Company, LLC, and Western Property Group was one of 10 new members. Another new board member is Ed Jones of Houston. The former Midlander is the Chief Executive Officer of Gulf Capital Bank and member of the Board of Trustees for the Mabee Foundation. Quote, the Board of Advisors, a non-fiduciary appointed group, works closely with the college's Board of Trustees to provide counsel and support for advancing the strategic needs and mission for the college. End quote. Baylor College of Medicine wrote in the news release. The Board of Advisors consists of community leaders from Texas and around the country. The new members are Robert Albritton, Washington, D.C., founder of Politico and executive chairman of Perpetual Capital Partners, Heidi Arthur, New York, New York, chief campaign development officer for the Ad Council, Lisa Bordelon, Houston, senior vice president for Lockton Companies and founding chair of the partnership at Baylor College of Medicine, Stanley T. Crook, M.D., Ph.D., Sedona, Arizona, founder, chairman, and chief executive officer of the Lorem Foundation, and founder and former chairman and former chief executive officer of Ionis Pharmaceuticals, Inc. Shelley Hendry, Houston, member of the Board of Trustees for the Lester and Sue Smith Foundation and the Holocaust Museum, Houston. Dan Hoard III, Midland, partner in Headlock Investment Company, LLC, and Western Property Group. Ed Jones, Houston, Chief Executive Officer of Gulf Capital Bank and member of the Board of Trustees for the Mabee Foundation. Drayton McLean III, Temple, partner at McLean Group and Chairman of Sports in Action and McLean Classic Foods. Randall Onstead, Santa Fe, New Mexico, Trustee Emeritus of the Baylor College of Medicine, Board of Trustees, and former Chairman, President, and CEO of Randall's Food Markets, Inc. And Charlotte Temple, Lufkin and San Francisco, photographer, former chair of the TLL Temple Foundation Board of Trustees, and past board chairman of the Ansel Adams Center for Photography and the Foundation for San Francisco Architectural Heritage. Screening for lung cancer can save your life. Lung cancer screening can find cancer early and save your life. The main benefit of lung cancer screening is to find lung cancer before you have any symptoms. Lung cancer that is found at an early stage has a much better chance of being treated and increases survival rate. Cigarette smoking is still the highest risk factor for getting lung cancer, accounting for about 80% of lung cancer deaths in the United States. Both the amount and how long someone smokes increases the risk of dying from lung cancer. People who smoke are 25 times more likely to develop lung cancer than those who have never smoked. There are multiple other exposure risks that contribute to lung cancer, too. These exposures include radon gas, asbestos, arsenic, nickel, cadmium, beryllium, chromium, diesel fumes, silica, and secondhand smoke. The American Cancer Society estimates that about 236,740 new cases of lung cancer will be diagnosed, and approximately 130,180 people will die from lung cancer in the U.S. in 2022. Every year, more people die from lung cancer than from colon, breast, and prostate cancers combined. Screening with low-dose computed tomography reduced the lung cancer mortality rate by about 20%. LDCT uses X-rays to create 3D pictures of the inside of your chest that are much more detailed than chest X-rays and can find smaller lung growths, abnormalities that could be cancer, using a very small amount of radiation. The scans are quick and painless, like having a picture taken. There are no needles or medications given to you for this procedure, and you don't have to skip breakfast or lunch for this exam. You can even drive yourself and be in and out in less than half an hour. LDCT scans are the only test that can find lung cancer early. Lung cancer screening is for those patients who do not have symptoms but are at highest risk of lung cancer. Currently, lung cancer screening LDCT scans are only for current smokers or former smokers who have quit smoking in the past 15 years, aged 50 to 77 years old if you have Medicare, and up to age 80 for most commercial insurances, with no symptoms of lung cancer, and a smoking history of at least 20 pack years. This is the number of packs of cigarettes per day multiplied by the number of years smoked. A pack year is an average of one pack of cigarettes a day for 1 year. For example, a person could have a 20-pack year history by smoking one pack a day for 20 years, two packs a day for 10 years, or half a pack a day for 40 years. Lung cancer screening should be done early, yearly, for as long as you meet the criteria, or until you develop a health problem that makes you unwilling or unable to have surgery if lung cancer is found. Lung cancer screenings are covered by Medicare, Medicaid, and most commercial insurance companies, just like mammograms, colonoscopies, and pap smears. An order from your provider is required each year, and your provider is required to provide you with a shared decision-making visit. This is to discuss the importance of adhering to the annual LDCT lung cancer screenings, the ability or willingness to undergo diagnosis and treatment, if necessary, and counseling on the importance of smoking cessation, current smoker, or remaining smoke-free, former smoker. Screening with a yearly LDCT scan is the best way to find lung cancer at an early stage before it is spread to other parts of the body. When lung cancer is found early, it is easier to treat and survive. If you have any questions about lung cancer screenings, or if you qualify, call Chastity Shelton, Nurse Navigator, at 432-221-3933. National pediatric bed shortage prompts Texas to give tips on testing, treatment. Texas hospitals are urging the public to stay vigilant about respiratory illnesses following nationwide reports of pediatric hospital bed shortages due to this season's rapid spread of respiratory syncytial virus and influenza. Texas pediatric hospital beds have been 88% occupied in recent weeks, according to data from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. Texas hospitals are reporting surges in patients visiting emergency departments for non-emergency medical conditions, such as mild symptoms and routine testing. Wait times and patient volumes are increasing, and emergency department capacity in some areas is being depleted by visits for non-emergency medical conditions and requests for testing. Pervasive staff shortages further complicate surges in hospital visits. Quote, hospitals are here for Texas, particularly in emergencies, end quote, said John Hawkins, president/CEO of the Texas Hospital Association. Quote, our capacity to provide emergency care must be protected for those who need us most, end quote. For mild symptoms, flu testing can occur through a person's regular doctor's office, urgent care clinic, or public health department. Hospital emergency departments should be used for people who are very sick or believe they are experiencing an emergency medical condition, including one related to respiratory or flu sickness. While many people recover from RSV and flu on their own, those who are at high risk of complications or are concerned about their illness should contact their healthcare provider for guidance. THA offers the following tips for the public. Don't seek hospital emergency care for non-emergency medical conditions such as mild symptoms and routine testing. Do contact your healthcare provider for guidance as warranted. Do seek hospital emergency care if symptoms are worrisome and emergency care is needed. Emergency medical conditions can include difficulty breathing, dehydration, and worsening symptoms. Do get vaccinated against the flu if eligible. Visit vaccines.gov to search for flu vaccine availability. Do be patient if seeking care through a hospital emergency department. Consider that wait times may be elevated as respiratory illnesses reach seasonal peak levels. THA is monitoring the pediatric bed situation among Texas hospitals following nationwide reports of bed shortages attributed to RSV. Nationally, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services data shows that 76% of pediatric beds across the country are full, with anecdotal reports largely pinning the shortage on widespread RSV infections. Influenza cases are contributing to pediatric hospitalizations as well. THA is in contact with Texas hospitals and keeping tabs on affected facilities' efforts to respond to surges in bed capacity. Collecting these reports helps THA alert the Texas Department of State Health Services, the Texas Division of Emergency Management, and other state leadership to the situation on the ground. Influenza is a viral respiratory illness with symptoms that include fever, cough, stuffy or runny nose, sore throat, headache, chills, and fatigue. A flu test is not always needed to diagnose the flu. However, in some cases, it may be recommended by a healthcare provider. People at risk of complications should consult their healthcare provider. RSV infection is a viral respiratory illness that usually causes mild, cold-like symptoms. Most people recover in a week or two, but RSV can be serious, especially for infants and older adults, Symptoms include runny nose, decreased appetite, coughing, sneezing, fever, and wheezing. What is lymphoma? Dear Mayo Clinic, my sister recently noticed significantly enlarged lymph nodes in her neck. Her primary care physician said he thought she had lymphoma. What is lymphoma, and what is her prognosis? Is it hereditary? Lymphoma is a group of cancers that affect the lymphocytes. To better understand lymphoma, we have to start with the white blood cells. White blood cells are one of the three main types of cells that circulate in the blood, the other two being red cells and platelets. White blood cells are produced in the bone marrow and serve as the main element of the immune systems that help defend the body against infections such as the flu, COVID-19, and other diseases. There are five main types of white blood cells: neutrophils, eosinophils, basophils, monocytes, and lymphocytes. In a normal state, these cells die and get replaced by new cells frequently. The lymphocytes, which are a major type of white blood cells, could develop mutations in their DNA, preventing them from dying. The immortality of these cells is a defining feature of cancer. Cancer of the lymphocytes is called lymphoma. Lymphoma could be regarded as a cancer of the white blood cells, cancer of the immune system, or cancer of the blood. In essence, because of the origin of the cells and not because of the location of the cancer. Subsequently, these abnormal lymphocytes start dividing and creating copies. The accumulation of these cells builds tumors. Most often, these tumors present as enlarged lymph nodes. Lymphomas are very diverse cancers. There are more than 80 different types of lymphomas. They are broadly divided into two categories, Hodgkin lymphomas and non-Hodgkin lymphomas. These lymphomas may affect any part of the body, but they most frequently involve the lymph nodes, which are part of the lymphatic system. The lymphatic system is a network of tubes throughout the body that drain fluid, called lymph, which leaks from the blood vessels into the tissues and empties back into the bloodstream. Depending on the subtype of disease, lymphoma could be a very slow-growing cancer that might not require treatment at all. Conversely, other lymphomas may be fast-growing and aggressive, requiring immediate treatment. Thus, it is important to visit with a specialist who can confirm the actual subtype of lymphoma at diagnosis, since it will be significant to managing the cancer. There are other causes of enlarged lymph nodes that should be considered, such as viral and bacterial infections, autoimmune diseases, or other cancers. In many cases, patients present to their primary care providers with enlarged lymph nodes and receive treatment with a course of antibiotics. However, if the lymph nodes do not respond to treatment, other causes such as lymphoma or other cancers should be considered. Due to the complexity, a multidisciplinary cancer center that has a dedicated hematology or lymphoma practice is a great place to start to ensure all possibilities are reviewed. There usually aren't early symptoms for lung cancer. November is Lung Cancer Awareness Month. Lung cancer is the leading cause of cancer deaths worldwide. Each year, more people die from lung cancer than colon, breast, and prostate cancers combined, according to the American Cancer Society. Lung cancer is the second most common cancer in the U.S. and the deadliest, but there is promising news. Fewer cases of lung cancer and death occur every year, partly because more people are quitting smoking. Quote, 90% of lung cancers are related to cigarette smoking, end quote, said Dr. Karen Swanson, a Mayo Clinic pulmonologist and critical care specialist. Early detection and treatment also help lower the numbers. Quote, the holy grail, so to speak, is to find it at the earliest stage possible, where it can be surgically removed or treated with radiation or ablation for a cure, end quote, Swanson said. But that's often not the case because there usually aren't any early symptoms. Quote, one of the problems with lung cancer is that by the time a patient presents and is diagnosed with lung cancer, 80% of the time the lung cancer is spread, meaning it's not localized disease, end quote, Swanson said, which is why the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force recently lowered the lung cancer screening guidelines from age 55 and a 30-pack year history to age 50 and a 20-pack year history. Quote, some sort of smoking intervention to help the patient stop smoking is an essential part of any program because rather than diagnosing an early lung cancer, it's more important to stop the exposure, end quote, Swanson said.
Is stepping out in the cold with wet hair safe? Dear Dr. Roach, my great-aunt Rose died of pneumonia at 18 way before I was born. My mom told me Rose went out in the cold with wet hair, so she got sick. And she said that we didn't have any penicillin yet, so Rose died. Anyway, needless to say, that my sister and I didn't go out with wet hair. Why did people used to think you could get sick if you went outside with wet hair, especially in cold weather? Is there any possible connection between going outside in the cold with wet hair and getting sick? Everything I read says no, but that myth had to start somewhere. H.C. Answer. Colds are caused by viruses, and pneumonia can be caused by bacteria or viruses. Wet hair doesn't affect whether you are exposed to a virus or not. There remains some controversy about whether being cold increases your susceptibility to getting an infection of either viruses or bacteria. Most studies have suggested that there is not a significant increase in risk, but one study did show a 10% increase in colds among people who had their feet chilled. Folklore about medicine often contains a morsel of truth, sometimes a lot more. It is clear that low humidity levels, common in temperate zones during winter, increase the ability for viruses to be transmitted, but if there is an increased risk for colds for people who get cold or wet, the risk seems to be small.
Here is the Dear Abby column that appeared in the Midland Reporter-Telegram on Thursday, November 10th. Queer couple plan life together on their terms. Dear Abby, I'm a 30-something bisexual man who is in a relationship with a bisexual woman the same age. We both lived different lives and dated a variety of people before we met, but now I'm pretty sure she is the one. The issue arises when it comes to how others, particularly my parents and their friends, perceive us. To us, we are two queer people who have identified as some form of queer or bisexual since we were teenagers. We have repeatedly faced backlash from conservative family members and family friends about those we are attracted to. One of my mother's best friends is extremely homophobic. She has, at various holiday parties my parents have hosted, loudly voiced her homophobic views, including how proud she was to vote against same-sex marriage. How can I kindly explain to my mother that my girlfriend and I are not straight, and it is wrong to attach the straight label to us when we don't identify that way? Also, I want to say that I don't feel comfortable around her friend. A lot of what she talks about involves denigrating the sexuality of folks I have deep affection for. My mother is extremely defensive about her friend. She didn't take it kindly when I told her I deserve an apology for having to sit through this woman's homophobic diatribes, given that I am LGBTQ myself. We would like to be married in the next couple of years and make it a homophobia-free wedding. Can you help? Signed, Unstraight in Michigan. Dear Unstraight, the way to explain to your mother that you and your soon-to-be fiancé are not straight would be to tell her that in plain English. If you want to ensure that you and the woman you love have a homophobia-free wedding, plan it yourselves and control the guest list. Dear Abby, I have been married to Jeff for nearly 50 years. He suddenly learned through DNA that he has a 52-year-old son. The son has visited him, and they have talked on the phone. The guy was conceived in the summer of 1970. I started seeing my husband in September of that year. Jeff wants this man to leave him alone, and I can't deal with it either. We have three grown children, two of whom have become friends with this guy. There's no denying him. He looks more like Jeff than our son does. Evidently, the mother, who is deceased, never told him who his dad was. Are we wrong to feel this way? Signed, Don't Want to Deal With It. Dear Don't, what does this man want from your husband? If it's information, it should be shared. However, if what he is seeking is the father he never had, and a sense of belonging in your family, and you don't have it in your hearts to give it to him, then your feelings are your feelings. You have a right to them. I would gently remind you, however, that our society has changed a great deal over the last half century. While the kind of news you received used to be shocking or embarrassing, people today are far less judgmental and more welcoming than they used to be.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.